are listening to the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
You're listening to Oscar's Guitar Shop with Oscar Jordan, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Well, there's the Sphinx, of course.
The what?
The Sphinx.
I know this guy. Big crime fighter from down south. Big league hitter down there.
What's his power?
Well, he's terribly mysterious.
That's it? That's his power? He's mysterious?
Well, terribly mysterious.
Plus, he can, like, cut guns in half with his mind.
Really?
I think.
I hadn't heard that.
Greetings and salutations. Welcome to another episode of Oscar's Guitar Shop. I'm Vintage Guitar Magazine contributing writer Oscar Jordan, and I am burdened with glorious purpose. Yes, I am. I am. It's a glorious burden. So glad to be here, and I'm glad that you are here, because you have the best taste in the universe. You know, when you go out and you want fine guitar programming, this is the first place you come. It's the first and last place. You're here, and I'm glad you're here. We're going to have a good time. If you would like to support Oscar's Guitar Shop, go to oscarsguitarshop.com, click donations to the show, donate $30 or more, and be entered into the Oscar's Guitar Shop sweepstakes. The winner will receive a one-year subscription to Music Connection magazine and a Brimstone Audio crossover distortion pedal. Street price, $299.95. That's like $300 of this pedal. That's amazing. Go to the website. You'll see a picture of it. It's this big real estate thing with dials, and it gives you anything you'd ever want in overdrive and distortion. I even reviewed it in Vintage Guitar Magazine, so you know it's cool. It's a really, really cool pedal. The winner will be announced on August 30th. Go to oscarsguitarshop.com. Do it and win. Oscar's Guitar Shop is powered by Music Connection Magazine, informing music people, industry professionals, and support services since 1977. Visit them at musicconnection.com. Also, True Tone Music. Visit them at TrueToneMusic.com, making your music come to life. And last but not least, Mojave Amp Works. Visit the Oasis of Tone at MojaveAmpWorks.com. Find out what Peter Frampton, Billy Gibbons, and George Lynch are talking about. MojaveAmpWorks.com. And now, it's time. Gretchen Min is a classically trained guitarist who has studied with Andrew Segovia student Philip DeFemery. But don't hold that against her. She can rock like nobody's business, having done hard time on the sweltering stages of the tribute band circuit. She received hazardous duty pay, strapping on an SG portraying Angus Young in an AC/DC tribute band, and eventually traded that in for a Les Paul and a violin bow for the immensely popular all-female Led Zeppelin tribute band, Zapparella. Not only can Gretchen play freakishly amazing guitar, she's a bona fide airline pilot who is as comfortable in the cockpit of a Boeing 747 as she is busting out high-velocity arpeggio lines on the fretboard. Musically, she's surfed the treacherous landscapes of jazz, funk, prog, and metal in the band Sketch, Sticks and Bones, and Lap Dance Armageddon, and plays some fine acoustic guitar as well. Last year, she released her first solo album, Hail Souls, to great reviews, and she's been kicking ass ever since. Ladies and gentlemen, I'd like to introduce you, Gretchen Min. Hey, Gretchen.
Hey, Oscar.
How's it going?
Great, how are you?
The people love you.
Every introduction is on like that.
Wow, it must be a good feeling to know you play guitar so well that people applaud nonstop. They can't stop. How are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Doing okay. So what's going on in your life?
Just getting ready actually to do some recording later today.
Oh, really?
I've been practicing this morning and taking a break to chat with you, and then I'm going to record for the rest of the night.
Oh, what are you working on? Anything specific?
I'm working on my next record.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah.
How's that going for you? Are you pulling your hair out yet?
You know, I love it. You know, for whatever reason, some of the tedious qualities of it really doesn't bother me. I love the whole process. I love the compositional process. I love the recording process. I like the mixing, all of it. I guess the only thing I don't like as much as maybe some of the business logistics around it. But in terms of anything that's specifically related to, like, creating music, I love it all.
Mm. So, yeah, the business end kind of takes the air out of it a little bit, huh?
It's just not as creative, you know. I'd rather just be playing guitar and writing music.
Yeah. So are you living in the studio creating this, or did you create demos for yourself first?
Well, I'm not living in the studio creating it. I wrote the music beforehand. I studied composition, so I do actually have stuff like in score, like notated form.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote that ahead of time. But one thing I did on my previous album that I was glad I did, that I decided to do again, was not to have the entire album written before going into the studio, but having maybe a chunk of it written, and then as things developed in the studio, sort of learning from what was working well and what needed to be revisited a little bit, and also to be able to, you know, all over the course of recording a whole album, you know, if you're still working and growing as a musician, an album can take long enough that by the time you finish the album, you're kind of in a different place, both as a guitar player and as a composer. And so I wanted to be able to give myself some stuff that was still open to be reflective of what would be most recent for me.
Mm, that's pretty cool. Yeah, you want to leave a little door open there, because anything could happen during the process where you might get a better idea, or you're in improvisational mode, and you got to go with the new, fresh ideas, right?
Exactly.
Hmm. So what's different about this new record compared to your last one?
It's going to be, it's a lot more compositional, I guess. And it's a lot more unified, too. It's going to be almost more of a concept album.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be seamless. There are going to be more tracks, I think probably closer to 15 to 17 tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And incorporating other instruments as well. So I'm writing for more instruments and a slightly larger ensemble at times too.
Also, you're going to have other instruments besides the kind of three-piece maybe keyboard thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Like oboes, and lutes and trumpets. And
not those specifically, but violins, yes. Yes, bassoons everywhere.
Yeah. That's well, I'm sure, I mean, that would sound cool, but because I know I was researching you, and you just have this classical background from studying at Smith College, and that's awesome that you can bring that to your prog rock metal table, you know?
I love classical music. I mean, to me, I guess I've never really seen my taste as being more one than the other. Mm-hmm. You know, I was raised on classical music, but I was also around rock music, too. So I don't really see myself as a classical guitar player that turned to electric guitar or vice versa. I just love both.
Mm-hmm. But, I mean, but going, when you were in college, you had to make a choice, correct? And it just happened to be, was that just closest to your heart at that time, was pursuing? Because that's such a discipline to classical technique, you know what I mean?
Well, the choice is made for me because Smith is a smaller music department. And I say that not euphemistically. It's a fantastic music department. It just doesn't, because it is smaller, you don't get the same variety of courses. But the courses that you get there are absolutely fantastic. So it wasn't even an option to study electric guitar. They didn't have it in the program. Mm. But I did. But I knew that Philip DeFermery had this incredible reputation for being an amazing teacher. And I remember somebody, actually another guitar player, saying to me, you know, that Philip DeFermery was this amazing teacher, that he was a student of Segovia, that everybody who studied with him got perfect technique. And I was like, sold. Sign me up for perfect technique.
Right.
So, and I loved studying with him. He was amazing. And it was really great to start with that level of sensitivity to detail. I still love classical guitar, even though it's been a little bit less part of my daily routine recently.
I see. Yeah, because I studied a little classical guitar, and it's a beast because it's severe right hand independence, finger independence, and, you know, the picking right hand finger styles. While you were in college, were you also playing, say, rock styles on the electric guitar?
What I was doing is, I mean, I really started my first year of college. I mean, my dad had a guitar, and I'd gotten interested in it. But, you know, when you're talking about your junior year in high school, at least for me, it's like I was studying for the SATs. Like, I was trying to get good grades in school, and I was really into music, but it was mostly, I would say more than what was happening for me then was just the expansion of my ears. That was when I started getting into like Eric Johnson and Dixie Dregs and Frank Zappa. So even though I wasn't playing guitar, I was getting really deep in aesthetically to guitar-oriented music. So my first year of college was really my first year really playing guitar, and that's when I decided to be more serious about it. And so what I did is I was taking classical guitar lessons, and also I decided to major in music. And so I had this electric guitar, and I every now and then I would take a guitar lesson from somebody, but it was really more here and there. Most of what I learned on electric guitar was taking what I was learning in my music theory classes, mm-hmm. and applying that to the electric guitar with at least the left hand technique predominantly from classical guitar. And then in terms of the picking, I just experimented with various ways of picking, and eventually, you know, and anybody who looks at my right hand knows I'm a Steve Morse fan. So
there you go. I was just going to say that because there's some similarities, but also the fact that he's such a monster classical guy just by himself. And then, you know, he picks up the electric and just blows your face off. You know, he's just in. And so you both have those things where you can swap back and forth. And you know, and of course, for me, Persnickety Pam, you know, there's a difference between, say, playing, say, Eddie Van Halen's Spanish Fly and actually playing, mm-hmm. like, real kind of classical-style guitar, you know, or, you know, well, that's kind of more flamenco, but, you know, the idea of traditional classical repertoire is different than kind of sounding classical-like, you know?
It's a whole
different thing.
I think Van Momsen, for example, is a perfect example of somebody who takes a lot from, like, Baroque mm-hmm. type compositions, but his technique isn't classical. I mean, his technique is all electric, even though he draws from the repertoire. Whereas, you know, classical guitar sort of involves a whole technical system as well. Like you pointed out, the right hand is really different.
Right. And that's why when Yngwie, when he interprets, say, classical music, even when he plays a Bach piece, versus, say, when Steve Morse interprets a Bach piece, it's totally different.
Yeah, it really is.
Yeah, because I mean, you know, Steve Morse would, you know, when he was in college, he was doing the recitals, full blown, you know, guys with ties on and ascots, you know, it was pipes.
Right.
And,
exactly.
That's the serious stuff. Yeah, I love that. I really respect you for that, because that is not easy to, you know, have to do those type of things and those type of sight reading recitals with the classic, with the leg up on the stool and the whole thing. That's awesome stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah. I think it's cool that you balance that. You know, you got your rock chops together and your classical, and you nailed it. That's awesome, and I can hear it in your work today.
Oh well, God, thank you so much. And I feel like an infant, but I'm just always trying to learn more.
Yeah. Well, I want to play another song of yours, and then I want to get to your rock stage thing that you do with Zeparella, and then to your solo work. This is a cool track. I really dig it. This is called Fast Crowd, and it's from Gretchen Menn's album, Hail Souls.
Reagan!
Yeah, I can dig it. I can dig it. Yes, I can. Gretchen. Wow.
Yes.
Gretchen, can you dig it? What do you think about when you hear something like that that you wrote a while ago and you're a new person from back when you wrote that? Now you're different. When you look back and you listen, what do you think about?
That's a really good question. You know, I think it's funny because I don't listen to it really, other than like just now. I haven't listened to it in, I don't know, a year or something like that. Other than to practice it, I guess. You know, what went through my mind is everything, remembering like when I wrote it to how it was teaching other people that. That one's got kind of a monstrous structure to it. And every time I've taught it to another musician, a person on the track with me was Jude Gold. He and I played in Lap Dance Armageddon together. And initially I played it with Sticks and Stones. But I remember, and now teaching it to my trio, that initially there's this major pain in the ass factor learning it, because it doesn't really follow the typical song structure, but there is a rhyme and reason to it. So it's funny to go back and be like, oh yeah, I remember teaching this one to Jude. Oh, I remember teaching that to Mikal. I remember showing that to Angeline and Tom. but yeah, it's fun to kind of revisit stuff and think.
So
you remember how it all came to be.
So you remember the labor of teaching it, but does it take you back to when you were composing it?
Yeah, actually, I remember writing it. I ended up, I had it in, you know, sort of a primary form. And then I was invited to go to a show one night. I think it was like, I don't remember who it was. It was somebody cool. And I ended up not going to the show because I wanted to stay home and write. And I was conflicted for a minute, because you always think, oh, if I don't go to see this person, you know, what happens if like I never get another opportunity to see them? And then I thought, you know, but if I finish this song, that's going to be more meaningful to me than going to a show. So I sat home and I finished, you know, at least got most of the song done. And I was really glad I did.
That's very cool. Well, you made the right choice, because this is a really cool tune. Very, very cool tune. So tell me the story, because you're studying classical technique and music and all that, and the next thing you know, you're on stage with a Les Paul strapped on your body and a violin bow, and the and the levee is breaking. And how did that leap come about?
Little in-between part that you mentioned in the introduction. So I went to school, graduated with a degree in music. I actually graduated a year early. And so I sort of thought, well, I have this extra year that I hadn't really expected to have, and what am I going to do with that? And since I was well aware when I chose to be a music major that there isn't like an obvious payoff from that. I just studied music because it was what I wanted to study. And so I ended up deciding that I didn't want to put the burden of making money on something that was just a passion for me, and I decided I just wanted to keep my passion pure, kind of. So, you know, if I made money doing it, great, but that I wouldn't become jaded by the music industry. You know, my feeling is, ask not what music can do for me, you know? Just do it and do it from a good place and be happy doing it. So I realized that did mean like, okay, so how am I going to pay for rent and such, like, you know, stuff like that, the daily necessities. So I'd taken a couple of flight lessons kind of capriciously when I was in school, and I really enjoyed it, but it was too expensive to do as a hobby. And yet when I started thinking about doing it as a career, I realized that going to flight school and getting all of my licenses was about the same cost as a year of college. And so I felt like I could justify it since I was graduating a year early. I was like, well, it's going to ultimately be the same amount of money as if I had just gone, if I'd been in college for 4 years. Mm-hmm. So I went to flight school and I got all my licenses, and then I flight instructed for a year right after that. And then I got hired immediately for an airline. And actually, what I flew was not a 747, although that would have been really cool.
I was going to say the space shuttle, but that was probably not your training in that.
Yeah, you know what? That's what I would have liked, though. I remember when I was a kid, I was really giving astronaut a really serious thought for a career path. Unlike most other kids, I would imagine. Isn't that what every kid wants to be?
Yes.
So
they want to be a Starship Commander. Like, that's what they want to be.
Absolutely. So I flew a regional jet for a little less than a year, and realized that, you know, playing my guitar in hotel rooms wasn't really going to allow me to play music the way I wanted to. So I left. And then that's when I decided to stop trying to do sort of the sideways approach to music. I just kind of go more direct and then let everything else fall into place. So I kind of made flight instructing my you know, bread and butter, and had music just be something I decided to do, you know, as, you know, as seriously as possible. And so I started playing in AC/DC, and I did that for a couple of years, and that was immediately gave birth to Zeffirella, because Clementine, who's the drummer for Zeffirella, she was the drummer for AC/DC when I was in the band. And what had happened is, just the people in AC/DC, we were all wanting, or Clementine and I were finding that we had sort of different musical goals. Like, we were wanting to play more and kind of do music more as a career. And what had happened is, AC/DC had gotten an offer to open a tour for Reverend Horton Heat, mm-hmm. which we thought, Clementine and I thought was about the coolest thing ever. And, you know, there wasn't going to be, like, money in it or anything like that, but we wanted to do it anyway. It was going to be, like, 2 or 3 weeks. But it wasn't what the other girls in AC/DC wanted to do, and so, you know, the tour got turned down, and I remember Clementine and me actually driving to a gig. We're like right crossing the Golden Gate Bridge, and she was like hitting the steering wheel, being like, I'm so frustrated. I wish we could have another band so that, you know, when AC/DC turns down, you know, opportunities like that, you know, we would have something else to offer. And I was like, yeah, I hear you. We'd really like to do the tour. And she said, you know, I've always wanted to do a Led Zeppelin tribute band. And I said, you know, if you would consider letting me audition for that, like, I would be so down if you decide to do it. And I learned then that Clementine works really fast, because she gave me, I don't know, a couple days later, 15 songs, and said, our first gig is in 8 weeks. And I spent 4 hours a day learning 15 Led Zeppelin songs. And then we just started gigging.
Wow. That is cool.
Yeah.
You guys thought it up, and let's do it. That's the way things get done. That's great.
Yeah.
So what were those early gigs like for you, trying to wrestle that music? You know, I'm even, you know, I mean, I've played some of that, and it's not easy stuff to nail on stage on your feet.
No, it was terrifying at first. And Clementine totally did not shy away from throwing Heartbreaker and Since I've Been Loving You, like, into the first set. Mm-hmm. So we came out with, like, the most guitar, or some of the more guitar-intensive songs from our first gig. And this was also when I was living in San Diego, so we had 3 rehearsals. I had 8 weeks to learn all the material, 3 rehearsals, and then we had our first show. So I'm sure, you know, I think back on it, I'm like, oh, man, I'm sure that was terrible. But we were just sort of trying to get through it without, you know, without any horrifying train wrecks. But, I, you know, let me put it this way. I wouldn't watch any videos from those first shows.
Well, that's cool. But, you know, that must have been how did that affect your playing to have to focus in on one guitar player and his style of playing for a long period of time? What did that do to you as an artist and as a guitarist?
That's a really good question. You know, I got into a lot of guitar-oriented music because I love Led Zeppelin. So for me, it was really natural to want to study Jimmy Page anyway. And my feeling has always been, if you think about the way anybody learns any language, and ultimately music is a language, we learn imitatively. You know, babies learn from imitating their parents. And so if initially the first phase of learning a language is imitation, you know, basically I'm getting paid education to learn how to imitate one of my favorite guitar players playing some of my favorite music. And Led Zeppelin and Jimmy Page specifically, it's so expansive. Like, I mean, he does so many different things. I love playing AC/DC, mind you. I absolutely love AC/DC. But the emotional spectrum of Led Zeppelin is vast. So, I mean, I've learned the acoustic songs. You know, they have heavy stuff. They have, you know, really dynamic stuff. They have bassy, jammy stuff. They have things that are... It provides a really great... just variety of challenges, everything from multi-track, you know, things like a solo, Places in the Ocean and in Black Dog, Missing Out in Hop or Ramble On, there are all of these spots where there's these harmonized guitar lines that I realized, you know, when I came to learn them, didn't want to have to pick one. And I just, you know, so you get into problem solving mode and you realize, oh, wait, I can play that as double stops, you know, and you hear both of the parts. And even if that isn't what Jimmy did live, you know, that's where your own kind of semi-creative interpretation comes in, which is you make the decision, do I study the live versions and do what Jimmy did live, or do I try to replicate how I remember the song from the recording? So,
So you can
get things like I never played slide guitar before.
Wow.
And that was fun to learn how to do. And ultimately, for somebody who started in classical guitar, one of the pitfalls can be that you can be very, I don't want to say metronomic, but there's sort of it's a different sense of feel. And Jimmy Page's feel was really good for me to study because it's so relaxed and it's so wobbly in a really cool way. And that was good for me both in terms of just what's inherent for my personality, as I'm more of an exacting type of person. And also that quality in me was then fostered even more with the classical training. So to have to go to the opposite end of the spectrum and be like, yeah, it should be kind of floppy. Yeah, it should be kind of loosey-goosey. Yeah, you have to play way behind the beat. Those were really good things for me to try to learn.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot there. One of my favorite songs is Since I've Been Loving You. And, you know, I come from blues, so hearing this kind of progressive song with all these extra chords and a blues progression was like mind blowing when I first learned it. And it just goes on and on with Jimmy Page's work. He's just a genius, of all the songs and the tunings and the acoustic. And then, you know, he had this rockabilly thing on the side along with this Chicago blues thing. And it's a great education for any guitar player to just study Jimmy Page.
I totally agree. And you mentioned one of my favorite Jimmy solos. I think Since I've Been Loving You is just amazing.
Yeah.
So beautiful.
And speaking of amazing, I'd like to play another track from your album. It's called Scrap Metal. It's from the album Hail Souls. And it goes a little like this. Tone Music is a virtual candy store for guitarists and bass players. They're world famous for having the best selection of new and used and vintage guitars in the Los Angeles area. Located at 714 Santa Monica Boulevard in the city of Santa Monica, True Tone Music offers the widest selection of exceptionally high-quality guitars and basses. They stock name brands like Fender, Gibson, Guild, Epiphone, Gretsch, and much, much more. It's where the top names in the music industry shop for guitars, basses, amps, boutique pedals, and accessories. Whether you want to buy, sell, trade, get guitar lessons, or repairs, True Tone Music's super cool staff is there to make your music come to life. They'll also match any online price and back it up with top-notch customer support and service. Visit them online at TrueToneMusic.com or call 310-393-8232. That's 310-393-8232. Ask for Ken. Tell him Oscar sent you. Wow. Very nice. Miss Gretchen, you do great art. That's good stuff.
Oh,
you do good.
Glad you like it.
You make good music. So, what I know about you is you love Music Man guitars. Now, what is it about the Music Man guitars? The Silhouette, that's your main one, right?
Yeah.
What is it about that model that you like so much?
You know, it was my first guitar, and it just has always felt like home. You know, it's interesting when the first guitar you ever have in your hands proves to actually be a fantastic instrument because, you know, the first thing you play, you don't really have any frame of reference and way of comparing it to anything else. And every single time I've tried out another guitar, for whatever reason, I just always like the Silhouette better. It's such a solid instrument. I happen to like it aesthetically in that it's not really frilly and frou-frou-y.
Mm-hmm.
I just like it. It's well-balanced. It's really solid. They stay in tune really well. And my hands just like it. And I love the way they sound. They're versatile instruments, which is obviously got a little taste of, you know, that I have kind of eclectic taste. So I don't want to have to be changing my guitar every two or three songs. I want a guitar that I can play something heavy like scrap metal, but then also go to something totally different as well.
Mm. Did you swap out the pickups at all in it?
The main one I have, no, it's just stock DiMarzio's single coils.
Mm-hmm. And what comes in the stock Silhouette? Is it they just have their own?
Yeah, the single coils are like just DiMarzio single coils. And they sound great. DiMarzio is also another company I work with, and they make fantastic pickups. And the ones that came in my Silhouette are fantastic. I wanted to do all single coil. I do have two other Silhouettes that have the single coils in the neck and the middle position, and then DiMarzio Fast Track 2 in the bridge position.
Mm. Oh, that's a great pickup.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm, very cool. How about amps? What are you using for amps?
I got a variety. The ones that I've been using, a main amp for my solo stuff. Well, my main clean amp, I have an old Fender, like a 65 Fender Deluxe Reverb.
Mm.
And but that one I don't really take out of, you know, it's in my house and in the studio, but it's a senior citizen amp, so I don't take it out for gigs. And most of the time when I'm playing gigs, I'm not playing, you know, I'm playing louder stuff anyway.
Right.
For Zeppelella, I've got a 1976 Marshall JMP. The 50 watt, and I do have a gain mod on it so that I can get, you know, more gain at, you know, somewhat non-ludicrous volume.
Mm-hmm.
And then I use an Engel for most of my solo stuff. It's a Special Edition 670 with EL34s.
Mm. Are you using half stack with both those rigs?
I have a custom cabinet or a couple custom cabinets by like a boutique builder. Guitar cabinets. They look like 4x12s, but they're actually ported 2x12s, which is why I can freak out sound guys by throwing them up on stage at myself.
Yeah, they tell you to turn down before you even started playing, you know. They'll say, hey, you know. That's
right, right.
Yeah.
Or you just get some tiny girl throwing around a, what seems to be a 4x12 and people don't understand the physics around it.
And do you have an endorsement deal for violin bows?
You know, I really wish I did. actually, the violin bow I've had for a long time was given to me. We Zeph Bowl played a show where the opening act was a string quartet. And every time we've ever played with real string players, I take them aside and apologize for what I'm about to do. Mm-hmm. And they're always very sweet about it. And one of them actually saw the bow that I had been using, and she's like, "What is that bow?" She's like, "That's like a child-sized bow." And I was like, "I don't know. Somebody just gave it to me." She gave me her spare bow. So that's the one that I've been using for a few years now that is now getting excellently frayed looking, but I think only a matter of time before I'm going to need to get another one.
Yeah. Well, when Jimmy Page was doing it, he had the little hairs whipping all around his head when he would do the majestic hand waving with the bow. It looks cool on stage. That's all I got to say. If it's in good shape, it's not as cool as if the little hairs are flying everywhere, you know?
It's true. I liked it better once it started getting kind of ratty looking. But, you know, the bow was actually a hard sell for me. I didn't want to do it. The other girls pretty much had to twist my arm. I thought it was going to be, too Spinal Tap, you know? And it wasn't until, you know, I was sort of voted out and I had to do it that I actually started enjoying it more and actually started realizing the sonic possibilities and kind of why Jimmy did it. And I was like, really? We're on stage. Like, already I feel like we're kind of on holy ground already playing Led Zeppelin. And I don't want to do anything that's going to seem kind of too much like Stonehenge. So, but it wasn't until I actually kind of got deeper into it that I really started enjoying it and realizing how cool it can be.
Mm. How important is it for you in Zeppelin to have vintage gear or as close as possible to what Jimmy actually had?
It's extremely important to me, and I'm accepting gifts of all sorts of vintage Les Pauls or old Marshalls should anybody want to send me them. No, I've got just newer Les Paul standards. Larry DiMarzio was cruel enough to let me play his 59 Les Paul, and it's like, you just shouldn't even do it because it's like those instruments are, whatever, $300,000. So I'll never be able to afford one, and yes, they are that cool.
Yeah.
So my Les Pauls are just, you know, they're decent Les Paul standards, like from, I don't know, 2003 or something like that. And I just have them set up well. And actually, it's a good thing because with the amount that we play and the amount those things get tossed around, it's like I don't want to be, you know, freaking out all the time about my gear.
Right.
But I do like having the old Marshall. Yeah, it's a really great sounding amp.
Are you using like an Echoplex or anything like that on the floor?
You know, I do have an Echoplex. I actually have an original Mike Batto Tubeplex, but I haven't been bringing that. It's always a question of confession of what's actually going to be feasible at a gig and all of that, especially if you don't have a whole road crew and, you know, the kinds of things that Zeppelin had. Mm-hmm. So no, I've got a more standard pedal board, although I do have an old vintage Crybaby Wawa pedal, and I was using for a while a really old MXR Phase 90, which I eventually, it sounds great, but I swapped it out for a Providence pedal phase shifter, which also sounds fantastic and is just more reliable. Mm.
Take me through your signal chain from your amp through your effects.
For Zeppelin?
Yes.
Or
Zeppelin.
Okay. So I just have Les Paul, used DiMarzio cables, plugged into the Crybaby Wawa pedal that then goes, you know, and some of this is just the way that makes sense in terms of pedal board real estate. So that then goes into a Boss tuner that then goes into the an exotic effect AC booster, and then into the phase shifter, and then into the Line 6 DL4. It's a delay modeler, and that one's convenient because it saves all these presets. So when I'm going from, say, like in Dazed and Confused, you know, there's like three different delay settings that I use. And it also has a tap tempo function, which is, you know, really necessary too.
Mm-hmm.
But that's it.
Wow. You know,
and then into the Marshall
right. Jam. And so you're getting most of the dirt from the Marshall as opposed to on the floor.
Yeah. The AC booster is really just for solos, and it's mostly just a clean boost. I have a little extra gain, but I just click it on for solos.
Yeah, I mean, you know what's funny about the AC booster, because I have one too. A lot of people use it as a clean boost, but it's not that clean. I mean, it gives you a little bit of dirt just to make your solos pop out, which is probably a really good combination for your Marshall.
Yeah, it's fantastic for that, and it sounds great with the Fender as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a little grit on the boost there, which you need that, you know?
Yeah.
Very cool. Well, you know, it sounds like you got it going on. Now, as far as, your solo stuff, and you're using Engels, right?
Yeah.
Which model?
That's a special edition 670 with EL34s. So mm-hmm. It's an absolutely gigantic amp that weighs unfathomable amounts, but it sounds really, really good. So, and it's got four channels. I really only use two primarily, three sometimes, one of them I rarely use.
Mm. Wow, that's very cool. Wow, you've got some cool gear. Oh boy, I wish I was as attractive as you so I could get a lot of free stuff. Boy, I tell you, I could really use a nice new angle amp. But you know, we're near the end of the show.
I didn't get it free, I paid for my angle.
I know.
I sold a kidney to pay for that thing.
Those are nice. That's because like Steve Morse has a signature model now, right?
Yeah, he does.
Yeah, those are cool amps, and me and Steve go way back. I am such a slobbering fan of his, and I used to own the original Steve Morse guitar, and I am a freak, and you know I notice a lot of similarities in your playing, and which is probably why I like your playing so much, because you guys have the same kind of classical and rock sensibilities, which is just awesome. Love your stuff.
Well, he is absolutely one of my biggest inspirations and heroes, and I'm, you know, sometimes I look back, I'm like, why at 15 did I realize how cool he was? But somehow I did. So you and me both. I'm a massive Steve Morse fan.
Yeah. Well, Gretchen, it's time for that part of the show called The Burning Question. Gretchen Men, are you ready for the burning question?
I think so.
What do you say to douchebags when they say, oh, but she's a girl, she's not playing it like a guy?
You know, fortunately, no douchebag has actually said that directly to me. And most of the time, I guess I just am somewhat... I would be perplexed and feel sorry for them. But I guess I don't even really know what that means. Like, what do you mean play it like a guy? So I don't really see where anybody could think that gender has anything more to do with how somebody plays guitar than hair color or height or race or weight. So
there you go. That's the correct answer. Congratulations. We're going to send you a new Engel Special Edition 670 with EL34s. Brand spanking new. Well, Gretchen, thank you so much for coming on the program. It's been great, and I'm so lucky that I've been introduced to your music. I love your stuff, and I love talking with you. I love your whole vibe, and continued success, okay?
Oh, you too. Thank you so much for having me on
here.
Yes,
give her another round of applause, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, don't stop. Yes. Yes. Give it up. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. That's our show. I'd like to thank our guest. Her name is Gretchen Men, and she plays amazing guitar stuff. She does amazing things on guitar. Set mind to purpose and visit her at GretchenMen.com. and purchase every piece of music she has ever written. We'd also like to thank our sponsors, Music Connection Magazine. Visit them at musicconnectionmagazine.com. Also, True Tone Music at truetonemusic.com. And last but not least, Mojave Ampworks. Visit the Oasis of Tone at mojaveampworks.com. donate $30 or more to be entered into Oscar's Guitar Shop sweepstakes, where the winner will receive a one-year subscription to Music Connection magazine, and they'll get a Brimstone Audio crossover distortion pedal. The winner will be announced on August 30th. Go to oscarsguitarshop.com, do it, and win. Tune in next week when our guest will be former Michael Jackson guitarist Jennifer Batten. Take care of yourselves. Be nice to each other. See you same time next week. Same bat time. Same bat channel.